Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Imbued with a passion for music and songwriting from a young age, Rob Gaylard's road to forming The Nomadic stemmed from his own nomadic lifestyle, living in five different countries in the first 10 years of his life, including Australia, Burma, Singapore, the Solomon Islands, and the UK. This nomadic theme continued into Gaylard's adulthood with a talented creative living and working with the United Nations, national governments, and NGOs in Kenya, Somalia, the Sudan, Afghanistan, Indonesia, and Israel-Palestine. Singer and songwriter The Nomadic entices listeners to enter a world of boundless melodies and wanderlust-inspired styles. First witnessed in 2022 with The Nomadic's debut album My Mind Is Racing. The theme continues with his second album New Horizons, which was released in December of 2024. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Australian The Nomadic. Where do we find you in the world and how are you doing?
Thanks, Barrett. Yeah, I'm calling in from Sydney, Australia. So beautiful summer's day here and can't complain.
Where does the name The Nomadic come from?
So I have basically had quite a nomadic existence. I think I lived in five different countries before the age of 10. And so I was always playing around with that theme, nomadic. And in fact, when I was a bit younger, I was going to have a band with my cousin, Maddie, and she won't mind me sharing this. So her name is Mad. So I said, I'm going to have a band called Nomad, and you're not allowed to be in it because there's no Mad in the band. But that turned into a bit of a joke. And obviously, you know, Digital Nomad, Nomad Coffee, you know, that name had kind of been around quite a bit. And so I thought Nomadic, The Nomadic, and I just sort of settled on The Nomadic. It just seemed to stick quite well.
Okay. Let's rewind. At what age did you think, cool, you want to be in the music or entertainment world, creative world? And how did that journey progress to where we are currently?
Yeah, it's been a bit of a winding road. I think I've always loved music and always been able to sort of get lost in a good song, and particularly indie rock and alternative rock, Americana rock, Britpop. But I guess, you know, my career, I had a long career working with the United Nations. I worked in Kenya, Somalia, the Sudan, Afghanistan, Israel, Palestine, Indonesia. But I was always writing music at that period. And then I think when I went to New York in 2012, I just sort of thought, well, you know, this is the right time to be, you know, expanding on my music and producing music and writing music and playing live. So probably it was that period that I thought, you know, let's do something with the music. And I started to sort of ramp that up and get involved with the scene there. So probably it's always been there, but from about 2012 onwards, I sort of decided to take it a bit more seriously and do more with it and write and produce more and play live. So yeah, I guess, as I said, it's been a bit of a winding road. It's always been there, but probably the last 10 or so years, I've started to just do it a little bit more seriously, take it a bit more professionally, and try to just sort of make the best of the songs that I've written and produce them to the highest standard.
Interesting. You say that it was there, but not professionally. So for the listeners, they think, oh, well, you're just creating music and it's just that. They sort of observing it. What is the shift of being non-professional to being professional? And were there any aspects in your experience that you were surprised about in the sense that, oh, this is part of it?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think if you look at the definition of professional, I guess, is, you know, are you making money from it? And, you know, I mean, obviously we all know how hard it is to make money from streaming, right? So, but I guess once you start to, like, professionally, you could say, are you starting to make money from it? Or it could just be, is it a certain standard you want to reach? And I think because of the democratization of music, you know, from Napster all the way onwards now to Spotify, we can get into our criticism of that, how the industry is, but there's something like 60,000 plus songs that are released every day on Spotify. So I think if you want to give yourself the best chance, you have to have it at a certain standard. So to answer your question, I think I was surprised by how much time and effort goes into actually recording a song that's ready for Spotify or ready to be published, you know, like in terms of the instrumentation and the arrangement and the vocal takes. It's just not something you do in 5 minutes. It takes a fair amount of, you know, professional expertise and time and hard work that goes into it. And I guess the average listener just thinks, oh yeah, cool, there's a song on Spotify, and doesn't probably understand how much goes into it. But I think it's something, if you want to give yourself the best chance of having your music heard and appreciated. And I mean, I guess I like to do things to the best possible standard in whatever I do in my life. So that was something I just sort of challenged myself to do. But it definitely surprised me that it's not just, you don't just record a demo and put it up. I mean, you have to sort of really spend time to get it to the right standard before you can release it.
So I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. I love the aesthetic of holding something, the journey of the choice, the journey of the unpacking, the booklet, the listening from song 1 to 10 or 15. I'm not sure if you're aware that CDs, even cassettes and vinyls, are making a massive comeback. Vinyls alone last year in the UK, 5.9 million copies sold, the biggest since 1990. And cassettes and CDs are also on an upward trajectory. But we've also got these streaming platforms whereby people consume music on. What is your observation and perception of the landscape at the moment?
Well, to be honest, what you're saying about the CDs and vinyls is news to me. It's probably welcome news, of course. I mean, things shift so quickly, right? So I hadn't actually heard that. So that's probably a good sign. I think on the plus side, it is, in a way, the democratization of music, right? So, you know, you can produce music and put it up on the internet and on Spotify, as long as it meets a certain quality. So I think that's good. I mean, any musician would tell you that the streaming payout is absurdly low. In fact, I have a little cousin, Huxley. He's 6 years old and he streams my music all the time. And he says, oh, Uncle Rob only gets paid, you know, 0.33 cents. So whenever he's in the car with his mom, he insists that they play my music, which is quite funny. He's getting an early lesson into the realities of modern capitalism, right? So, yeah, I mean, of course, I think it probably should be more, definitely. And I know that there is some legislation they're looking at in the US to sort of bump it up to, I think, a cent per stream or something, but who knows where that's going to go. I think if you look at the history of music, and, you know, I love reading like rock biographies and things, and, you know, the musicians have tended to be screwed anyway since the dawn of time, unless they're quite business minded and can sort of, you know, push back and make sure they're getting a good contract. And, you know, we all know that the history of the relationship with labels and that sort of indentured servitude type that arrangement that musicians often have. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. You know, it's obviously to do with globalization and global capitalism, and, you know, we just have to sort of keep advocating. But on the other hand, I mean, I try not to get too cynical or negative about it. I'm appreciative that, you know, I can put my music out there and hopefully people enjoy it. And you can only, you know, control what you can control, which is writing music and producing it to a high standard, putting it out and marketing it. And then, you know, there's a lot that you don't control. So it's important not to sort of get too caught up in that and stressed out. Otherwise, you know, you're not enjoying the process anymore. And I think that should be the bottom line for musicians.
I think there definitely needs to be a massive education piece around this. So I teach spinning classes, and I was speaking to a bunch of people before one of the classes, about 8 to 10 people, and we were discussing this specific thing. And I said to the group that if an artist gets 100 million streams, how much money do they think that the artist is actually getting in their pocket? And they all said, oh, around 50 million. And I said, well, actually, it's 1,000. And they were all completely shocked and horrified. As I said, I think there needs to be a massive sort of discussion, educational piece around this. I see that Snoop Dogg, Ray, and a bunch of others are voicing it, which is making more of the listeners and fans aware. But there definitely, as I said again, needs to be more discussion and conversation around this. Maybe we should get Huxley to do sort of a promo ad or clip to post to get everyone to understand what is happening.
Exactly. Well, he seems to care quite a lot about it. So maybe in his generation things will change. I don't know.
From 3 to 4 minutes in creating a song. Is it easy every time? What motivates it? What invigorates it? Let's unpack your creative brain.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best sort of nomadic songs, I tend to just write them in one go, actually, you know, with a guitar or keyboard and, you know, a sort of an atmospheric view. Maybe I have some sort of guitar pedals going on. But that's just the demo. And then when I sort of get with the band in the studio and Dan Frizzer on production, it's quite a democratic process of deciding the direction the song would go in. You know, there's certain influences. I guess The War on Drugs is one, Phosphorescent, Daniel Lanois, The National, Coldplay, maybe early Coldplay. You know, with the band, you know, Miles Thomas on drums and Ollie Thorpe guitar, Brendan Clark bass. I mean, they're very accomplished musicians and they have quite a lot of experience with, you know, production and arrangement. So, yeah, I try and stay quite open to the process of how we're going to arrange and produce the song. And I think that tends to lead to the best possible outcome. So there's usually, you know, I usually write the initial sort of demo and have my ideas. And then when we get in the studio, it's a fairly kind of democratic process in terms of the direction the song goes in.
What is next? What's happening short term and long term?
Well, yeah, we've released New Horizons. So really proud of that. That's, you know, come out and there are a few singles that were released and then a few that were not on the album. I'm actually heading to Byron Bay to record an acoustic album with Ollie and Dan, and that's sort of that kind of Johnny Cash sort of very stripped back style. We also have another album in the works called American Dream, which is a 17 track album that will be coming out. That's probably getting a little bit more political from my time in the US, you know, the observations of the inequality and COVID, and I also spent time in Afghanistan, so there's probably a little bit of a critique there of US foreign policy, and just some of the observations I had being there during COVID in New York. So that, I think, lyrically is an interesting direction for us to take, because it is touching on a few political themes, which I think is, you know, it's very current, and it's always there in my songwriting. You know, the absolution, hearts and minds, those have underlying kind of political currents to it. But American Dream is getting more towards a critique of, you know, some of the things we talked about, global capitalism and the American Dream, and some of the economic and social inequalities I observed. So yeah, I'm excited for that as well, and, you know, just to keep the momentum building. Keep, you know, releasing. There'll probably be like 5 or 6 singles and then the album. It's a 17 track album, so yeah, definitely a good time to be following the nomadic, I would say.
Looking at the concept of releasing a single from an album, for you personally, because it is a personal observation or choice, for you personally, what is the thing that says to you, okay, this is going to be a single release and this is not going to be a single release?
I mean, there's certain very practical considerations, like the length of the song, whether it's radio friendly, that kind of thing. I mean, I think when you're growing a following, usually there's a lot of advice around just put out singles and then eventually put them on the album. But I sort of feel, well, you know, I've got a big, vast catalog and I don't really want to sit on music. So we released 8 singles and then there's 4 other songs from New Horizons itself, the main song, and then there's an outro section, Luminescent View, Find a Way, and Erasing Mental Photographs. Oh, and another song called Blood Red Sky, which is about the Australian bushfires of 2020. So I did debate about whether I should release them as singles, but I just sort of thought, well, you know what, got to just put them out there and you know, for the world to see. I mean, I think the worst thing is to sort of, you know, sit on these songs and not release them. So to answer your question, it's a bit of a mix of the two. You want to kind of let the song shine, but you also don't really want to be sitting on them forever. So at one point you've just really got to put it out and you know, for the world. And there's a bit of perfectionism and there's a bit of, I don't know, imposter syndrome and, oh, it's not ready yet, let's do a bit more polishing. But eventually you have to just sort of put it out there and, you know, don't let perfect become the enemy of the good.
I love that. That sounds actually like a title to a song, I'm just saying. You mentioned a little bit earlier about an acoustic album. So for the listeners who do not know, what is acoustic?
So it would just be very much stripped back. I mean, you can think of Johnny Cash, Hurt, for example, or I don't know, Oasis, Talk Tonight. So it's just an acoustic guitar and me singing pretty much. Okay. Very, very, very stripped back. Versus if you hear like Marie Antoinette or any of the songs really, but say Marie Antoinette, it starts off with an acoustic guitar, but then it sort of builds in with the bass and the keyboard, and eventually in the sort of second chorus and the outro, it's the whole band, including like violins and cellos. So the arrangement is basically a lot more in depth and complicated and layered. And acoustic is pretty much just my vocals and an acoustic guitar. So nice little contrast, I think, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, how people react to that.
Am I correct in my understanding that a demo is sort of acoustic and more stripped back, and then when the song is released, all those other layers of instruments, etc., are added onto it for the release? Am I correct in my understanding or not?
Yeah, it can be. I mean, a demo can just be an acoustic guitar, but of course now, you know, with the computer and technology and, you know, GarageBand and Logic, you can add a lot to a demo. So it sounds pretty advanced. But when we go in the studio, we're recording with the full band in real time.
Yes.
So I think that's, I mean, I have some songs up on SoundCloud. If you look at the Nomadic SoundCloud, you can look at like Revolution or Luminescent View. All the songs on this album are also on the SoundCloud. So you can sort of see the difference. Yeah, I think it's just more, yeah, it's just more polished, I think, if you do it. Sounds better with the full band and, as you say, layered. But a demo, not necessarily. Typically, it might just be with a guitar. But as I said, with technology nowadays, you can actually add a lot to a demo to make it sound pretty sort of advanced and layered.
I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 8 years, I know your answer will be different every time because there are millions of them. I recognize that and I understand that. I'm not saying favorite, I'm saying top of mind. But if you had to push play to 5 songs by other artists once we finish this conversation, what would those 5 songs be and by whom?
Probably the first one, I do love Fontaine's DC, who are getting pretty big. I saw them in New York, actually, when they were coming up in 2019. So In the Modern World is a great song from their album Romance, which I think won some awards recently. There's a song I heard play in Texas over the summer, their summer, July, called Sedona by Houndmouth, which I really love. So Sedona by Houndmouth, Phosphorescent song, Vizula. I love that song. War on Drugs, Holding On. And maybe one other, maybe anything by The National, like, yeah, anything really by The National, All the Wine, something like that. Yeah. I really like The National. Yeah.
And what do you enjoy about performing live?
Well, just the getting in the flow of, you know, playing the song, singing the songs, feeling the energy from the crowd, feeling that connection. Hopefully people, you know, appreciate the music. You can see them appreciating the music. It's probably just that connection with other people and, you know, the power and the joy that music can bring to people.
So I'm that guy that's normally standing up right in front, dancing, jamming, doing my thing. I'll take my phone out and take a couple of videos, a couple of photos, and I'll put it away. I notice that the people around me, they oftentimes 70%, 80%, 90% of the time videoing, posting, tweeting, photoing. From your perspective, being on the stage and seeing a bunch of phones, do you feel that takes away from the energy of the interaction with the audience and from them being in the moment? Or it's just where society is at this stage?
Yeah, I think it's both. I think it's where society is at the moment. And I'm not going to be judgmental. I mean, I've definitely been that guy at, you know, Imagine Dragons or Noel Gallagher in New York, where I'm like taking videos of Don't Look Back in Anger and Wonderwall and stuff. But I think it does, fundamentally, there's something a bit sad about taking videos and watching it later. You know, you're never going to watch it later. So why not just enjoy it in the moment? I mean, I wouldn't judge anyone for doing it because I do it myself. But I think it's probably better just to enjoy the concert because you're not going to, I mean, I never really go through my phone and rewatch old videos. I mean, someone's done a better job on YouTube anyway. So if you want to watch it, you can watch it on YouTube. But
So the podcast is listened to throughout the world. So as a final message, what would you like to say?
Yeah, just, stay well. We've, had a conversation about supporting independent artists. Just remember there are, a lot of really cool artists, I'm sure in South Africa as well. So just remember to get out and watch up and coming bands and support the music scene. There's a lot of cool stuff. There's a lot of sort of gold nuggets there. So that would be one. And yeah, just enjoy music, I think. And if you're aspiring singer-songwriter, enjoy the journey, enjoy the process, don't give up, and yeah, just keep doing the next right thing and don't give up on your dreams.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.